The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
Welcome to the Radio Today programme. I'm Stuart Clarkson, in for Trevor Dan again this week, and we've got the usual roundup of this week's radio news later, plus the anorak trip down memory lane in David Lloyd's Radio Moments. But this week there's been lots of talk on radio stations all around the world about the really sad news of the death of Robin Williams, some of it better than other bits. We've had misunderstanding and wrong assumptions. But one clip that was doing the rounds on Twitter was of Jeff Lloyd on Absolute Radio's Home Time show, and he's on the Radio Today programme with us this week to talk about it. We're going to play a short extract in a minute, Jeff. First, just kind of set the scene for us. Tell us when this came about, this link.
Yeah. So it was the day after the news broke, which in actual fact was the day that most people heard the news. I go to bed quite late, so I was up as it started to break about midnight. And obviously, you know, if you're doing a show like mine, which is in essence a silly show, but part of it is reflecting what that day is, what people are talking about that day. And I thought, I'm going to have to talk about this. And it was sad. I think I said on the radio, it's one of those things, it's especially modern phenomenon, that when a famous person dies, we not only think about it in terms of how it affects us or how it makes us think about our own life or youth slipping away, because in essence, that's what it is a lot of the time. But we live in this age where people share that publicly on social media. So you start to glean what the mood is, and you start to glean different opinions and ways that people are expressing their own thoughts on the story. So by and large, people had woken up to that news. They'd had the day to react to it. They'd seen that there's this outpouring of love and grief on social media, and they'd started to read opinion, if you like, columnists or people tweeting or whatever.
And at that time, we didn't really know what had actually happened. It was all a little bit speculation, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think even in the original reports, it was assumed and suggested it might have been a suicide. So people are reacting to that, and people, there's this outpouring of grief because he's such a loved man, and we think of him as this ball of energy, and he's so funny, and it brims and pops out of him. And then people start using that tears of a clown line, or you know, there's always darkness behind the laughter, and I think that grossly oversimplifies the idea of depression. And I wanted to talk about Robin Williams, but I really wanted to talk about that idea, and I didn't really know that much of what I was going to say, and I felt uncomfortable doing it, you know, because as I said before, it's like it's a stupid show, and I didn't want to be like, you know, like when you would hear those great dinosaur DJs back in the day, Dave Lee Travis, all of a sudden coming out of an Eagles record, then launching into a rant about seal culling, or when Noel Edmonds was on the TV and he would start ranting about health and safety. Like, I didn't want it to feel misplaced, didn't want to feel like, oh, why is this man preaching? But I also felt there was something interesting and important to say about it. And I felt very uncomfortable because there's something that seemed to me self-serious about talking about it. And also, it's just not a topic that any of us are very good at discussing.
And the time of day, it's early on in your show as well. It's start your show 5 o'clock-ish, is that right?
Yeah, which felt like the place to talk about it, because towards the beginning of the show, I'm trying to reflect what's going on in the day. And then as the show goes on, it probably gets a bit more into like stories from real life, or you know, silly, whimsical features, and it gets a bit dafter. So it felt like if I was going to talk about something of the day, it was going to be early on in the programme.
Okay, let's have a quick listen. We'll talk some more in a moment. Let's have a listen to just a couple of minutes of what turned into about a 10-minute link.
It's the biggest thing in England and Wales. Suicide is the biggest killer of men aged between 20 and 49. Like 77% of all suicides in England and Wales are men, and mainly young men as well. And I know I'm embarrassing myself talking about this, but like the reason it's happening more with men than it is with women, is because it's a more uncomfortable thing for men to talk about it. And I thought, like, if this radio station has an audience which is skewed towards men, then it's a small price, really, sort of humiliating myself to talk about it a little bit more. And if you are one of those people, and if you feel sad, like, not about a thing, like, it's not about an event, not about a thing in your life, but just that it's heavy sometimes, and you feel pathetic, and you feel weak and inferior and not like a proper person because everybody else seems to be able to get on with their lives, and it seems more difficult to you, and then for some reason that makes you feel worse about yourself. It's important people know that that isn't weakness, or it's just a thing that some people's brains malfunction. It's a bad bit of wiring in some people's brains, and you can do stuff about it. You know, you can go and see a doctor. There's medication they can give you. There are techniques you can do. There's talking about stuff you can do. And I think if we talk about it, and once again, I know, like, I can't look at, I've got my eyes closed at the moment because I can't look at anybody else in the room. I know it's embarrassing to talk about it, but we've got to start talking about it, because if it's not you, it could be your husband or your boyfriend or somebody you work with, your mate.
I mean, really powerful stuff, and a lot of people saying it's one of the best bits of radio they've heard for a long time. Has that reaction that there's been taken you by surprise, Jeff?
Yeah. It's difficult to talk about it in a way, because I don't want to sound as if I'm trying to make any capital of it, because it was just something I wanted to talk about. I didn't know how long I was going to speak for. I don't even remember what I said. I had to take my headphones off just then when you played the clip. I felt very out of my comfort zone talking about it as well, like I was a long way from the shore, so to speak. And I think it's something about that people have responded to, that it was, I'm trying to think of a way of describing it that doesn't sound sort of self-serious, but there was nothing contrived about it is probably the thing. There was something, for want of a better word, honest about it. And
there was nothing kind of planned. It was just all you thinking, right, I'm going to say something, but no, not quite what I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, and I knew that I wanted to talk about this charity, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, which specifically looks at men's mental health issues and suicide as a topic. I knew that's where I wanted to get to, because if it's something we're not talking about, and if people do feel this shame for living with that illness, I wanted to give them something at the end which says, okay, if something about what I've just said, you're listening to that and thinking, oh, that's me as well, then here's something you can do about it. But I didn't really know how I'd get there. It feels weird deconstructing something you said, you know, like doing a director's commentary on a link. It seems peculiar.
I mean, did you have a conversation with your producer and the team, or even a manager, before the show or before the link, or was it just completely spontaneous?
No, we're a bit dysfunctional in that respect, our program, because I've always had this thing with radio that I like the reaction in the room to be a genuine one. So I never even want to tell them what topics I'm going to talk about, let alone what I'm going to say about them, before I get into it. So nobody in the room expected that, and that was one of the most difficult things about it, really, is, like, for whatever reason, I got a bit emotional during it, which felt embarrassing to me, especially as a good northerner. You know, you've got to bottle your feelings up. And then to then turn the microphones off, be sat in a room with three people who you don't generally talk about those things with, that felt peculiar and uncomfortable.
Do you think there's anywhere else on a music radio station where you would kind of get away with doing that?
I don't know, because I didn't even think about it in terms of getting away with it, really. Like, I wouldn't. I think it if you're talking, would any other music radio station let you do that every day? Then no, of course they wouldn't be. They'd be insane to, and Absolute would be insane to want me or let me do that every day. And I think maybe part of the reason people have responded to it in the way they have is that it wasn't what that program normally sounds like. It was a break from what it normally sounds like. So something about that grabbed people's attention. I'm sure there are many more eloquent broadcasters than me. I'm sure James O'Brien can often speak on LBC, can often speak on a topic that weighty and with that kind of emotion. But it doesn't stand out because it's something you're used to hearing from that kind of broadcasting. I think maybe that's why people responded in the way they did.
And I guess his audience, though, is quite different to yours. Obviously, you're a music-loving, sport-loving, comedy-loving kind of male-skewed audience, and they've got that personal connection with you, having listened to you for many years as kind of their mate who's telling them about all this great new music. So that's a bit of a different person to be having that conversation with them than somebody who's on a talk station.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's a lot to do with it. And I think like the worst thing to do at this stage would be, as I said before, like anything of making any kind of capital out of it feels very vulgar to me. And I'm not going to go on next week and think, okay, what can I rant about today? Donkey sanctuaries or restless leg syndrome. Maybe that'll get some traction. It was just really this blip. It was this odd thing, and it feels peculiar to me to be talking about it because it just sort of blurred out of me at the time. And again I feel like I sound almost like mock showbiz sentimentality stuff, but I've been very touched by people's response to it, because that's been the thing really. I did it and I felt a long way from shore, and as I was wrapping up I thought, have I just humiliated myself here? Not because of the subject matter, but because this isn't the time or the place for it. And then the reaction from people has been the most astonishing thing of my career. I've just been inundated with email and text messages and tweets and Facebook messages from people telling me about their experiences with this illness, either personally or in their own family, and just what the act of talking about it meant to them. And again, I don't think it's because I did a particularly articulate job of it. I just think it's because it's something we don't talk about. And it just release the pressure. People are like, yes, that's me. That's my family. That's my husband or whatever it was. And I think that's the thing, really.
And that's the kind of power and impact of being on the radio, I guess, that, you know, most days you're telling somebody about your record of the week and they're thinking, oh, I love this, I'm going to go out and buy that, and they get some action out of the power and the impact that you've had on what you've done in that link. And the same is true of this, it's just a different kind of impact.
Yeah, I think so. A funny thing is, my wife is a comedian, and she was doing a comedy night that night, so I went straight after the show to this comedy night. And you know, the interval came and it was just before she was about to go on, and I'm just checking my email, and all of a sudden there's these hundreds of messages from people talking about their own experience with depression and suicide. And I'm weepy, you know, I'm a weepy person. So I'm sitting in a comedy club trying to hide the fact that I'm crying. And I've got my wife next to me who's sort of nervous about going up. I'm the one audience member she should be able to rely on. And I'm sitting there just really falling to pieces and weeping.
I mean, I know you said, you know, you're not going to do this again, but it kind of highlights the kind of impact you can have. Because if one person listening to your show on Tuesday night, as a result of hearing what you said, went out and said, actually, I'm going to ask somebody for some help, then that's a massive difference. I mean, there are all sorts of issues for your audience who, as we said, are, you know, middle-aged men, whether that's, you know, testicular cancer or any kind of stuff like that. There's a lot of things that you can work with your audience to do stuff like that without kind of going down the too worthy line.
Well, that's a funny thing, actually. That when I was thinking, should I get into this on the air or not, or is it too worthy, is it too preachy? A couple of weeks ago, we checked ourselves for testicular cancer on the air. We had that guy off Embarrassing Bodies in the studio, and we all had our scrotums out in the studio. There was no eye contact that day either. and it did occur to me that if we're comfortable doing that, then we should also be comfortable talking about this other thing. And of course, there's something inherently funny about balls in the way that there isn't about suicide. So that was, you know, challenging to hit the right note. And I don't know how you do that. I think it's something we should talk about more, but I don't know how you do it in a way that feels accessible. Although that said, I didn't know that this would feel accessible, and people have been genuinely lovely about it.
And what's the boss said? Have you had a word with the boss about it?
No, I bumped into one of the Bauer bosses today, who was very complimentary about it, and my line manager, Tony. He was up in Edinburgh at the time, but he'd seen the reaction on social media and he sent me a nice email. But I feel embarrassed talking about it in real life to people anyway. So I've just been trying to scuttle about under the radar.
Thanks for talking to us, Jeff. Really appreciate it. And I would recommend anybody who hasn't heard this audio to go away and listen to the whole 10 minutes. Obviously not you, because you don't want to listen back to it.
No. I was saying before, like, just the sound of my own voice. I don't know how other people do it. I know that some people really get a kick out hearing themselves on the radio, but...
we know who they are.
Yeah. But if I'm in the office and I hear my voice on a trail, I'm just full of self-hatred and self-loathing. Like, oh my God, if that's so abrasive to me, how must it be to people listening at home?
Well, we won't force you to listen to, but we'd recommend people go away and find it. It's on audio, but it's on SoundCloud. You'll find the link and have a good listen. Jeff, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the Radio Today programme.
Thanks, Stuart.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
David Lloyd's Radio Moments on the way. First, let's get this week's radio industry news from Roy Martin.
Jonathan Ross is heading back to BBC Radio 2, 6 years after the incident with Russell Brand, which made international headlines and led to him leaving the BBC altogether. He'll cover Steve Wright's afternoon show at the end of August. Fire Radio in Bournemouth, now owned by Celador and operating from Southampton, has gained Ofcom permission to drop all specialist shows, claiming the station is specialist enough already. And the voice of football, James Alexander Gordon, has died at the age of 78. See tributes from friends and colleagues on our website and Facebook page. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Radio Moments. It's 81 years this week since the first female announcer appeared on the BBC. She was Sheila Borrett. BBC historian Kate Murphy told Sheila's story to a successor, Jane Garvey, on Woman's Hour.
She was an actress and she'd come into the BBC to do radio plays and that sort of thing. I think that she must have wanted to be an announcer because it looks like she applied for the job and then underwent one of these very strict tests that they would have done to become an announcer. And she was given the job, and you get the impression that the BBC were quite excited about having a woman announcer, and it was really bigged up in the press and there was huge excitement about her coming in. The Radio Times, ahead of her first broadcast, they said here, "We foresee panic among the horsehair armchairs, retired colonels muttering darkly over their muffins."
Her tenure lasted but 3 months in the light of some 10,000 complaints, mostly not from grumpy majors, but from women. Shall we dance? 23 years ago this week, the successful bidder was announced for the only national commercial FM radio licence. The winner of the highest bid process was Showtime Radio, provided it could get the funds together. It didn't, and so by default, Classic FM was created. One national launch which proceeded unimpeded came from the BBC this week, 12 years ago.
And what a way to launch dub plate pressure. That's so hot off the press, it's still smoking.
It's blinging, blood.
There's fire coming off the vinyl. Extra Dangerous, Rodney P. Skits featuring Roots Maneuver, Beverly Knights and Gemma Fox, baby.
That was our very first special dub plate for One Extra. We've got more coming up from Demlock 56.
When we initially got the go-ahead, it was a relief as well as a joy, because although there's part of you which always feels as if you're going to get it, there's also a bit which says they could say no. Being the BBC, you sometimes do think that people are just going to do that to make a point. They're going to say no. But I think we definitely had a strong case.
Programme editor William Wilberforce reflecting on the arrival of One Extra this week in 2002. 17 years ago this week, we lost one of the greatest voiceovers of all time.
We thought that by not saying... we would be ringing the changes and adding a bit of variety.
Bill Mitchell, who died this week in 97.
When I was
about 12 years old, and my voice was changing. I got the mumps. I actually used to be a coloratura. And I was silent for approximately 3 weeks. That's how I took up drinking, really. Because I used to talk like... I can't do it anymore. It's injurious. And my voice changed at the same time I got the mumps. So I was silent for about 3 weeks, and then suddenly I opened my mouth, and this came out.
Bill Mitchell, who died this week in 97. Talking of voiceovers, an unlikely one died this week in 1980, Norman Shelley. He was heard on Children's Hour, and he played the bumbling Colonel Danby in The Archers. But less famously, and maybe more significantly, he was said to be the actor who delivered Churchill's speeches when the nation thought Winston had been at the mic.
We should prove ourselves once more able to defend our island home, to ride out the storm of war, and to outlive the menace of tyranny, if necessary for years, if necessary alone.
Winston Churchill, or was it Norman Shelley? Imagine what the Daily Mail would have made of that now. There are some moments in radio when your job means you announce history, and in some ways you feel part of it. If you were on duty this week, 37 years ago, you'd have been announcing this.
Independent Radio News at 11, this is Tricia Ingrams. Elvis Presley is dead. He collapsed at his home in Memphis, Tennessee this evening and was dead on arrival at the city's Baptist Hospital. Hospital officials say the cause of death was respiratory failure.
Radio Luxembourg.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Tony Prince. 15 minutes ago, I walked into the studio here in Luxembourg, and Mark Wesley imported the news on me that the Daily Mirror had confirmed to him that Elvis Presley has died in the United States of America. Well, maybe you know, maybe you don't know, that this radio station was the first radio station in Europe to ever feature the man and his music. Maybe you also know that I am probably one of his biggest fans in the world. I met him twice. I've interviewed him twice. I've introduced him on stage in Las Vegas at the Hilton Hotel. And I've just had a little cry downstairs because it's like losing a father to me, a son. It's really deep down inside, and I know many of you will be feeling the same way.
The announcement of the death of Elvis on IRN and also on Radio Luxembourg this week in 77. Radio Caroline was probably the most fondly remembered of the 60s pirates, so when her last ship floundered in bad 1980 weather, some thought she'd never return. She did, this week, in 83.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Radio Caroline on 319 metres, 963 kilohertz. I'm Tom, and for the next hour, I'd like to take you on a couple of musical journeys through the past two decades. We're going to start with the Zombies and She's Not There, and follow that with the Yardbirds with...
The return of Caroline from the Ross Revenge with its 92-metre mast looming into the sky from the waves, and a calm Tom Anderson there on duty with his almost smooth radio presentation style. He was said to be John Peel's inspiration. He was the second ever chart presenter in 1956, and he died this week in 95.
Let us just point out here that we over here have produced our own indigenous rock and roll with instinctive humour. Indeed, may we bring you, and to your attention, if you've not already heard it, this record by Gale Warning and the Weathermen of Met Rock.
Alan Dell, who appeared on Luxie, the live programme, and Radio 2 as well. So with Simon Bates quitting Classic FM 4 years ago to join Smooth, James Whale joining LBC 6 years ago, UKRD forming 24 years ago, and happy 71st birthday to John Humphreys.
You have become a bit of a figure of fun.
Well, you came a bit of a figure of fun not long ago when you made that speech and somebody leaked it, John. You know the fierce
I'm
storm...
I'm not the Deputy Prime Minister.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
Thanks, David. Thank you, Roy, as well for the news. And big thanks to my guest, Jeff Lloyd, this week on the Radio Today programme. Do go and look up that audio, listen to the full link. It's about 10 minutes long. It's on SoundCloud and Audioboo. There's lots of links on Twitter to it. Check it out. That's it for this week. I've been Stuart Clarkson. I'm at Stuart Clarkson with a U on Twitter if you want to look me up. And I'll be along next week with another edition of this fabulous podcast.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.